In today's news headlines, President Donald Trump is facing pushback over his retweet of a post that named the alleged whistleblower whose complaint to Congress sparked Trump's impeachment. A constitutional lawyer named Lawrence Tribe told Salon.com that in outing the whistleblower, quote, Trump has violated yet another law. Tribe explained that the Intelligence Community Whistleblower Protection Act of 1998 outlaws actions by government officials or agencies that directly or indirectly encourage retaliatory actions against employees who legitimately perform a whistleblower role in the intelligence community, as the whistleblower in this case clearly did regarding a matter of urgent concern as determined by the Inspector General. Trump has repeatedly urged the exposing of the whistleblower and even suggested he face the death penalty for daring to file his complaint. The New York Times on Sunday published a lengthy expose entitled Behind the Ukraine Aid Freeze, 84 Days of Conflict and Confusion. The report is based on, quote, interviews with dozens of current and former administration officials, congressional aides and others, previously undisclosed emails and documents, and a close reading of thousands of pages of impeachment testimony. It paints a detailed picture of Trump's decision to withhold congressionally mandated military aid to Ukraine as leverage to demand political dirt on Trump's rivals, and how his scheme stopped in its tracks when the whistleblower filed his complaint. Acting White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney emerged as, quote, a key conduit for transmitting Mr. Trump's demands for the freeze across the administration. Additionally, there was much more internal opposition to the Ukraine scheme than previously known, and that Defense Secretary Mark Esper, State Secretary Mike Pompeo, and National Security Advisor John Bolton all expressed strong criticism of it. Another figure, Michael Duffy, an official with the Office of Management and Budget, has also emerged as the point person to the Pentagon, instructing them to freeze the military aid and keep quiet about it. Analysts are citing the New York Times article as severely weakening Trump's impeachment defense. Meanwhile, State Secretary Pompeo is scheduled to visit Ukraine this Friday to assure the Eastern European nation of ongoing American commitment to its defenses from Russia. Pompeo will be the highest-ranking U.S. official to visit Ukraine since the controversial July 25th phone call between Trump and Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky. And Russian President Vladimir Putin reportedly called Trump on Sunday, speaking with him for the first time since the July Ukraine call. According to a statement from the Kremlin, Putin thanked Trump for the information shared via the special services that helped prevent terrorist acts in Russia. Several matters of mutual interest were discussed. An agreement was made to continue bilateral cooperation in the fight against terrorism, end of quote. The suspect in Sunday's New York stabbing at a rabbi's home apparently has no known ties to hate groups and has a history of mental illness. 37-year-old Grafton Thomas was arrested within hours of an attack at a private home of a Jewish rabbi in the New York suburb of Muncie, where a large Orthodox Jewish community lives. Five people were wounded during the two-minute attack that took place on Hanukkah. There have been a spate of incidents targeting Jews in New York City over the past few weeks alone. Mayor Bill de Blasio spoke alongside other community leaders in New York on Sunday about the attack.
People here represent all of Brooklyn, all of New York City. We are gathered in common cause to overcome this hatred. And I don't want people to forget that we have confronted hatred before in this city. We've confronted division.
That's New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio on Sunday referring to the stabbing attack at a rabbi's home in Muncie that injured five people. He also announced a plan to combat anti-Semitic attacks with a greater reliance on police and security cameras. Meanwhile, in Texas, violence broke out at a church in a town called White Settlement. An armed man opened fire, killing two people, before armed parishioners pulled out their own guns and killed the suspect. The name of the alleged shooter has not yet been released and no motive is known. Defenders of gun proliferation are citing the attack as evidence that more rights for gun owners makes for a safer environment, even though the so-called good guy with a gun scenario is exceedingly rare. A new report found that 2019 had the highest number of mass shootings on record, with a whopping 41 incidents that took 211 lives. The overall homicide rate has paradoxically dropped. Bloomberg just published its Billionaires Index and found that the richest 500 people saw a whopping 25% increase in their already obscene levels of wealth over the past year. The top 500 richest people now sit on nearly $6 trillion, up $1.2 trillion over 2019. Veteran congressman and longtime civil rights icon John Lewis announced he is suffering from stage 4 pancreatic cancer. The highly celebrated 79-year-old Georgia representative has served 17 years in office and will be undergoing treatment for the disease that has low survival rates. He said, "I have been in some kind of fight for freedom, equality, basic human rights for nearly my entire life." He added, "I have never faced a fight quite like the one I have now." California retailers are struggling to comply with a new set of rules that go into effect January 1st over the data that they collect from shoppers. The sweeping new law, called the California Consumer Privacy Act, is modeled after a European law that protects consumer data from big companies that trade in user data. Reuters called it, quote, one of the most significant regulations overseeing the data collection practices of U.S. companies that, quote, lets shoppers to opt out of allowing retailers and other companies to sell personal data to third parties. The California law even requires retailers to place signs about the regulations inside brick-and-mortar stores. In international news, Defense Secretary Mark Esper announced on Sunday that the U.S. dropped bombs on Iraq and Syria aimed at an Iraqi militia group that Iran was backing. State Secretary Mike Pompeo referred to the bombs as, quote, precision defensive strikes, after the militia was identified as being responsible for strikes on Friday that killed a U.S. contractor in northern Iraq. The militia group, called Kataib Hezbollah, vowed retaliation against the U.S., and Iraq's government said it would reconsider its relationship with the U.S. The U.S. also dropped bombs on Mogadishu, the capital of Somalia, this past weekend. The U.S. strikes were apparently aimed at the Al-Shabaab militant group and resulted in at least 4 deaths of people that the U.S. claimed were terrorists. The U.S. Africa Command, or AFRICOM, has sharply increased its attacks on Somalia after President Trump unleashed the U.S. military. According to the Guardian newspaper, AFRICOM has killed more than 800 people in 110 airstrikes in Somalia since April 2017. And finally, UNICEF, the United Nations Children's Fund, has just released a report detailing worldwide violence against children over the past year. As the 2010s come to a close, the UNICEF found that since the start of the decade, the United Nations has verified more than 170,000 grave violations against children in conflict. That's the equivalent of more than 45 violations every single day. Nations like Syria, Afghanistan, and Yemen, where the U.S. has a deep military involvement, are epicenters of violence against children. And that does it for our news headlines today.